It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. This is episode 81, where we visit with Alex Boye in the second and third blocks, and boy, do we visit with him. So this opening exercises, it's going to be short. Wanted to share this email. This is from Michael. He says, "Hi." Hi, Michael. "I recently started listening to the podcast from the beginning, but I wasn't able to get the Kirby Hayborn episode to work. But even more troubling is that all of October and November archives won't load correctly. The pictures that you usually have next to the episodes just look like broken links. When I click the episode title, I see the player load, but when I click play, nothing happens. I jumped to December and it is working fine. Thank you, Michael." Michael, thank you so much for your email. A lot of this stuff we don't know that it's going on. So I appreciate when anyone gives us feedback about what's going on the site, theculturalhall.com. Especially with these older archives, you know, I'll make a complete admittance of guilt here. Sometimes I don't go back and look at the old stuff, but we are now working on it. We are aware of the problem, and hopefully it should be fixed relatively quickly. A lot of those are old blogs and stuff like that, so we got to get in and fix it. But those episodes, we're just trying to hunt them down, and then we'll get them reposted at theculturalhall.com. So, Michael, thank you. He sent an email to richie@theculturalhall.com, or actually, as it looks like it, he went to the Contact Us tab at theculturalhall.com and then just sent in the message that way. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at theculturalhall. We're going to be tweeting General Conference. It's coming up. So you can follow us along. It's a live tweeting general conference from different people tweeting. So make sure you make a plan for that. Have your phone. Respectfully have your phone as we talk general conference coming up. All right, let's do it. Alex Boye in the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie T here. I want to talk about a very special event going on. It is Peter Breinholt going to be in concert at Layton High School. That's here in Utah. Exact address, 440 North Wasatch Drive, Layton, Utah. It's a big concert that's going on to benefit Whitesides Elementary. You can find online information at whitesidespta.com. Tickets may be purchased in advance there. You can also call 801-837-7833. 35 for details, but it's a huge thing. They're doing all sorts of donations for Whitesides Elementary School. Also, they're going to have a silent auction. And best of all, it's Peter Breinholt. You love Peter Breinholt. You know Peter Breinholt. We've had him here in the Cultural Hall. He's a guy who does our You Can't Lose articles of news and the Cultural Hall outro, the whole thing. It's Peter Breinholt, a really good friend of this show. So if you're in the area, you're around Layton, you want to make the drive, go see Peter Breinholt Friday, April 12th. At the Layton High School Auditorium.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and a first in a couple of respects here, because it's the first time that we've had more than two people interview the guest, and it's the first time we've ever had someone from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir here.
All right, you're both
in the Cultural Hall.
Okay, so we're starting to make sense now.
Yeah, we're all here
so
for you.
You're descending on me, right?
So yeah, we're gonna pray upon you. You, of course, is Alex Boye. Thank you so much for being here in the Cultural Hall with us.
Good to be here, Richie.
You think Alex Boye, and the best way I can describe him, and forgive the crudeness of this, it's the black guy from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Well, that's what I say. What else? Right? How else you say?
But you know, there's
the
more than one black guy.
There's three of us. We call ourselves three pieces of licorice in a sea of marshmallows.
But Alex, I'm going to Wikipedia for this because I always love to find.
That's very inaccurate, by the way.
I know.
Wikipedia.
I want to find out the inaccuracies here. It says that you first performed.
Wrong. No, just kidding.
It says that you first performed in public while serving a mission for the church in England.
No,
No, when was your first, when did you start performing?
Like a couple of years before my mission. I used to perform at nightclubs like all over London to and you were make in a, money to save for my mission.
You were in a boy band, weren't you?
Yeah.
Was that pre-mish then?
I was going to say no, a girl band, but no.
It was kind of. Because you all had to have long hair and look really girly. Have you noticed that?
Oh,
boy
yeah.
Band, you had to look girly. Anyway, that's
the more you can
story.
Make yourself.
So I had to grow dreadlocks and try and make it look like Milli Vanilli style. I'm so glad that picture's not out on the internet.
It actually
I
is.
Seen it yet.
Yeah,
it is?
No, we've got it.
Get out of here,
yeah,
right?
We've posted it before yeah, on man, the know, Cultural man. Hall's Facebook page. Yeah,
know,
you bet.
Man. I've got Google Alert, man. I know when that stuff comes up.
The picture, the picture of you and the other guys in the band that where you're wearing high tops and your track
yeah,
suits.
Yeah, but that was before. I was before. I had dreadlocks before that. I cut it off just before that.
Yeah, we don't have the one with the dreadlocks, but we do have the one with you in the workout outfits and the whole deal. What is it called? Kaboom? What was it?
I don't the you know song?
No, the name of the band. The
oh,
name
awesome.
Of the awesome.
Yeah. Awesome?
Kaboom! That's actually better than awesome. That's
awesome
funny.
Was the name of your band?
Yeah.
Who named it?
Not me, man.
Was it one of your producers?
It was our manager.
Your manager?
We came off this. We're trying to find a name. And we did this performance. We were sweating like crazy. It was like a really fun one. It was like, guys, that was so awesome. You know, as the English, awesome. We're like, and so someone's like, awesome. Yeah. That's what we should call you guys. I'm like, okay.
Oh, boy.
Right.
And there was four of you?
Yeah.
Which, no, with boy bands, there's always, everybody falls into a role. You got the pretty one, the rebellious one.
That's what we had, yep.
What were you?
We had all that. I was just the songwriter.
So you were the brains.
I was the songwriter. And
you were John Lennon.
I put the whole thing together.
There you go.
And it was just, you know, a whole bunch of guys. In fact, one of them couldn't even dance. and we actually taught him how to dance.
Was he the cute one?
And no, he was the guy with the muscles.
Oh,
so we couldn't
really.
No one was going to say he couldn't dance.
Right.
But then he got better and better, and he actually got really, really good.
Okay.
It was kind of an interesting experience. Usually they're supposed to be like that before they join the band.
Right, right.
This guy could not dance when he was. But then after about 2 or 3 years in the band, he was like choreographing routines for us and everything.
What kind of stuff did you guys sing?
It was just, you know, we always said, because, you know, boy band is like poppy, throwaway, milk, poppy stuff. And so we were kind of like, we'd say we were from the streets, you know. We were like the milk poppy guys, but we were from the streets. So that was different from the manufactured bands that was out there. So that was like our.
Okay, so that was your angle. Yeah. You guys were from
but
the
then
streets.
We had one guy that was in the band who had curtains like this, and he had like lipstick and looked like a real girl, you know what I mean?
When was the height of your career? What years are we talking
97.
About? 97.
97, we had a hit called Rumors. You know, yeah, we were kind of the one-hit wonders.
Okay.
Yeah, we had the one hit that we just milked for as long as we could. And I mean, seriously, I think we milked that for like 3-4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty rare for a boy band, man, you know?
Because that's when all the boy bands were coming back. Backstreet, NSYNC.
Yeah. We opened for them.
Not that Rob keeps track or knows all sorts
I'm a DJ. I should know this stuff. I know my musical history.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You served a mission in Bristol, England?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great. I didn't have to learn a language, although some of the farm areas I did. But it was 200 miles from my house, so it wasn't that far.
Is that difficult though?
Well, I saw my ex-girlfriend on my mission.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was holding hands with some other guy in front of me, so that's why she was my ex. But, you know, I met family members on my mission and stuff like that. It was weird, but, you know, it's just that's all you know. So it was, for me, it was awesome, you know.
Are you a convert to the church?
Yeah.
Yeah? When did you convert?
I joined when I was 16.
How did that happen?
I had a guy that used to work in McDonald's. I used to work in McDonald's with him, and there was one guy in the store. The store manager who, like, if anyone got into fights, he'd send us home without pay. All the other managers were fine. And so, you know, one day he came up to me, you know, and, well, I actually asked him, why don't you let us all just, you know, scrap? Because, like, everybody else does, and all the other managers, they have no problem with it. Then he went into this spiel about how, like, the power of speech is more important than the power of the fist, and we all need to get along with each other. I'm like, well, you're one of them God people, right? You must be.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I guess you could say so. He, like, he had this really strong British, stronger than mine. Mine's like, you know, nothing of it. He kind of like a black guy, talked like the Queen, you know, 6'5" both ways, huge guy. And he was like, well, I think that it's important that we all get along with one another, you know. And then one day he asked me, he says, Alex, may I ask you a question? I said, what? Do you like American girls? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, why are you asking me if I like American girls? He's like, oh, no reason. And then I started like bugging him and chasing him and everything, you know. And he's like, he kind of had this one up on me, you know, after that, because we didn't get on that well, you know. And then one day I'm going home and I'm like heading to my doorstep. And what did I see? Two sister missionaries looking at me. And so they turn around, they got their badges, you know. It's like, hi, we're members of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, what? You know, I'm like, yeah, come in, you know. I let them in. I didn't even know who they were. I just let them in because they were cute and they talked really cool.
American girls.
So I let them in, you know. And then I started calling out all my friends. Said, you're not going to believe this. I have two American girls at my house and they are fine. And so my friends started coming over. You know, one time, seriously, there's one time the doorbell rang and there was about 15 of my friends coming. The sister missionary was like, well, we got baptized today. They were going crazy, you know. And they were teaching like all of us, you know. And, you know, we're 16 years old. We were just like rowdy, high testosterone, you know. What can you get out of us? Nothing, you know. But they were like the most professional. They were so with it, so on top of it. I mean, I wouldn't wish this situation on my worst enemy, you know. They were just like so amazing. And, you know, they started, you know, we really wasn't paying attention. And finally, I started feeling really bad. And I said, I'll tell you what, sisters, if you come back tomorrow, I won't let them come back. But you can teach me and you can tell me all everything that you want to tell me and all that stuff, you know, just to be polite. Mm-hmm. And so they came back the next day and, you know, it still wasn't registering with me. And I kept looking at my watch and hoping that they would get it, you know. And then finally, you know, one of the sisters, she gets up and she says, okay, well, thanks, you know, for letting us come. And she heads out of the door. And then the other sister comes and she shakes my hand. She said, thanks for letting us, you know, come to your house. And she heads out the door. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to see those guys again, you know, fun experience type thing. Now I'm like way popular at my school because I know two American girls. So they serve their purpose type thing, you know. And then one of the sisters, she had her head. Like she stood at my doorstep with her back facing me and she just bowed her head. And it seemed like she was there for like minutes, you know?
Yeah.
It was just really weird. She just had her head bowed. And I was like, Sister Thompson, are you okay? Hello? Hello? Yeah. You know? And then finally she turns around and she comes up towards me and she's got tears running down her face, like mascara is just like spiders, you know, all over her face, you know? And then I'm feeling bad and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, sister. I didn't mean to, you know, the guys, they're so rowdy. I didn't mean to bring them, you know, I feel really bad now. She said, no, you don't understand. These are tears of joy. And I'm like, what? And she said, well, you know, I'm new here. I come from America, come from thousands of miles. I don't know anyone. I don't know her, pointed to a companion. Mm-hmm. I'm scared. I've never left my state. I've never been between like 50 miles from where I live. Never. And now here I am in this place. I don't know anyone, you know. And you guys, you were the first one that let me in. And you're the first person that I had a chance to practice my religion on. And she said, no, I just want to tell you. And she bore a test for me because you didn't know what that was the time. She said, you know, I know Jesus Christ lived. I know that after 3 days, you know, he died and he rose again. He was resurrected and we'll all be resurrected after we die, you know. And that hit me. I was like, wait, what?
What's this
stuff? What did you just say?
Yeah.
Because I used to have really bad nightmares about dying.
Really?
You know, yeah. Reoccurring nightmares. Like me, I'm walking in the desert and I turn into a skeleton and I just fall and I got snakes coming out of my eyes. That's even before Harry Potter. And I was having that dream like constantly. Yeah, it's one thing to have it. That was weird. But then going to bed the next day having the same thing. Then again and again for like months. So I started thinking I was crazy, you know. I was like... So when she said that, I was like, tell me more about this life after death kind of stuff. Show me in the scriptures. She showed me. I said, show me another one. She showed me another one. And I said, do you really believe this? Like, do you really believe this? That I'm going to live again after I die? And she said, yeah. And I remember just begging her that she's not lying. Like, I've never wanted to know the truth to anything in my life more than I wanted to know that. And I said, you don't lie. Please, I'm begging you. I was on my knees. And she, you know... She just started bawling, and then, you know, the other sister started bawling. I started bawling, and the spirit was just smacking me across my face, left, right. It was the most powerful, like, experience, and I just knew. I was like, there's something about you two, and I got to know. Everything that you two know, don't hold back. You have to tell me right now. And so they just kept coming back, until 3 weeks later, I got baptized.
How was your family with that? Because your family wasn't members of the church.
Well, my mom, to that point, she was in Nigeria. She'd been there for 8 years. So
you're in London by yourself?
I was with foster parents.
Really?
Well, kind of like, I had an uncle who was always drinking and smoking, is really abusive and stuff like that. I was sneaking in the sisters into my bedroom to teach the discussions while he was asleep in his room. And as soon as we'd hear noise, I'd be like, one time I hid him in the cupboard because he came in. And the other time, you know, I would just like, I'd come out, I was like, coast is clear. And the sisters would just run out when they'd finished there. discussions. It was like, seriously, I felt like a Nazi, you know, dude trying to get Christians to come to my house and teach me. I mean, it was that scary for me at that time. You know, he's very intimidating, really scary. When he found out I joined the church, he kicked me out of the house. So I was homeless for like, you know, I don't know. I can't really remember. I mean, I was going to church and then I was sleeping on the streets. I was too embarrassed to tell anyone at church or my friends that I was homeless because he changed the locks and everything. When he found out I joined the church, he said, well, you know, he just took all my clothes and he threw it out and he said, get out. And he says, don't come back. And so, you know, for months, I was, you know, going to church, going to school, and then sleeping on the streets. I slept in this white van for like a week. You know, it was just the weirdest thing. But I remember just bawling like every day, you know. I remember one time I was sleeping in this van, and I remember just looking up. I got the scriptures that the sister missionaries gave me, and I'm looking up to the sky, and I'm like, wait a minute. You know, like weeks before this, this was like the most amazing life I'd ever had. The sisters are just like thrashing me the spirit every single time they came, and I'm reading, I'm doing the things they asked me to do, and I was feeling like amazing. And then the next time after they disappeared, they both got transferred. I'm left on my own. My uncle kicks me out of the house, and I'm like, this is the worst. This sucks. This is the worst life I've ever had in my life. And I remember I was just like, Heavenly Father, why don't you just leave me alone? Why? It was better before you came into my life. Everything was better. I didn't have these kind of problems. Now problems are worse. What kind of church is this? And I was just, oh, it was awful, you know. And I remember just like having this really, it was like this realization, you know. It was almost like a, you know, a spiritual voice that I could just feel that was just like, are you done? Are you done, you know, complaining yet? And I was like, well, yeah. And said, will you let me speak? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, just, and this is literally just turn to the scriptures. And I was just opening up the scriptures. And every time I opened it, it had the answers to every single, you know, everything about, oh, wait, how do I find peace? Everything sucks now. How's that going to be better? And there was all these scriptures, you know, and what do I do in my life now? Doctrine and Covenants 25, 10 and 12, talking about how you should forsake the things of this world and seek for things of a better. And I'm like, oh, well, what's better? And then I opened it up again to another scripture that gave me that answer. And I'm like, well, what do I do now? And I open up the script. It was insane. It was like, I was having a conversation through the scriptures with Heavenly Father. That's what it felt like.
How did you get from sleeping in a white van, being homeless, to going on a mission?
Well, I just, all those answers that I got, I wrote them down. I paid attention to them. And I kept, every time I was going through crap, it was that it saved me every time, you know. It was like I would read them and all the problems, sometimes they were still there. But, you know, I knew that that one where it says, forsake the things of this world, seek for something of a better. I knew that he was telling me I needed to go on a mission. So that was my plan. So, you know, people just started coming into my life. I was working. I was dancing at nightclubs and stuff to make money to go on a mission. I had people that were helping me out, Aaron and his family and the bishop, you know, found out I was homeless. And then, you know, I had friends. I stayed at, you know, this kind of communal place with like, you know, 15 students with one restroom and, you know, one kitchen.
Kind of like thing. A hostel?
Yeah. It was okay. Like that. And, you know, I stayed there for the longest time and, you know, and I went for my mission from there.
It's a pretty big leap.
It was a big leap, but it was better than where I was from. Yeah. You know, what I was going through. It was so, you know, it really was amazing. I, like, you know, life was just, within like, you know, 3-4 years, just my life was just like totally transformed.
So was the boy band stuff after the mission or
this
before?
It was after my mission, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't even singing. I didn't even know that I could even take a note and use it for music.
Where'd you find out?
Yeah, where'd you find your voice?
That was mainly, you know, I used to dance to save up for my mission. I used to dance like on like music videos for like artists in England, European artists and stuff.
Like who? Anyone we'd recognize?
Well, most of them you probably wouldn't, but one was George Michael.
Yeah.
And I remember I danced for him at the MTV European Music Awards. 89.
Okay.
No, sorry, I lied. No, because I was 99 on my mission. This was after my mission. So this was, what, 91 to 96. 96, because we got signed on 97. So 96, and I remember just like, you know, we had all these huge artists there and everything. And I remember like watching them all. But I wasn't watching the dancers, I was watching the singers. I'm like, they seem to be having way much more fun than the dancers do, you know?
Yeah.
The dancers, they go, they dance, and they have to go home. The singers, they go, they dance, and they get picked up by limos, and then they go off to the party, they go off to this and that. I'm like, I want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went home, and I got like my buddies. I got three of my buddies. I said, let's start a group. I'm like, what? Let's start a group. like, all right, you know. So they were all dancers, and so I kind of wrote songs and started singing, and you know, I kept going back to the studio and just, you know, I had this. We won this dance competition, and the prize was like a studio time, recording studio time. And this guy said we could use it anytime we wanted. It was like an 8-track studio, so I'd be there sometimes 2-3 o'clock in the morning, just recording and messing up and recording, and finally. I was honing, and it was just like getting practice. And then we found some songs that were half decent, and we'd turn it into a song and start recording it, and then, you know, performing it on the road and stuff like that.
So you weren't professionally taught. You just kind of did it. Yeah, you had the natural talent to kind
of. I just did it because, you know, I was bored and I wanted to do something a little bit more exciting than what I was doing. And I saw all these people having fun, all these singers. So I thought I'd try it, you know. And seriously, yeah, it was all just trial and error. I mean, there were sometimes we'd go out and we would just bomb. You know, like, what is it, photo bomb you have now? I don't know. Yeah. Stage bomb, can you call it? I don't know what you call it, but we had many of those, man. But we had some awesome times where we just rocked, man. And it was so much fun, and we just kept doing it. We'd perform at, like, a lot of the church dances, the LDS church dances in England.
Great. Were the other guys in the group all LDS?
No.
No, none of them?
No. There was one who was inactive. He was totally inactive. But the way that we'd try and get him to come at the churches, he'd be a DJ, he would DJ at the church dances. So he was so good that non-members would come to our church dances, and we'd have it at the university by the Royal Albert Hall. And so it was like really nice, you know, venue and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it was like a church dance. There's no drinking, no alcohol, no nothing. But people from all over would come, like our dances. And then other radio DJs would come. And then bands would perform. We started having bands, like, you know, local bands that weren't members that would perform at our church dances and stuff.
And you guys would perform.
And then we'd perform, yeah. We'd always, like, they'd be the openers for us. And we'd
be the headliners.
And then I remember, like,
headlining.
The girls.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome
headlining at the LDS chapel. And it was like, you know, girls started screaming. We're like, dude, we must be pretty decent, you know. Girls are screaming. You know? That was like, that was our radar, you know what I mean? If girls are like, no, this is a bad song. Oh, that's a great song. Let's keep doing that song. You know? And so, that's how we kept doing it. And then we found a manager. We got ripped off by about 10 or 15 of them. Finally, we found another manager. He said, you know, I want to take you to a meeting, meet a couple of friends of mine. Took us to Universal Records. Hmm. And he played us one. They played one of our songs. And they were like, they signed us there and then. And our first hit, our first song. No, our first song was a bomb. It was called Crazy. It didn't do that well. And then we got dropped by Universal Records. And we're all really, really sad and everything. And our manager calls us up. He says, guess what? He says, you guys just got re-signed. And I'm like, really? It's like, what company? It's like, well, he said this company. It's like this weird foreign name. I'm like, what? And then like, well, it's in Germany. I'm like, what? So we traveled to Germany. We spent like 5 years in Germany going back and forth. And we had the one hit Rumors. It just got like huge in Germany. And so we, you know, and that's how we started meeting all these big artists, because we're opening up for the Backstreet Boys now, because all the boy bands, they would start in Germany. All the American boy bands, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and all these people, they would go to Germany first when they'd go to Europe. Because if you can make it in Germany, you can make it in any other part of Europe. Because the German market, it's like the American market's the biggest. Then I think it's like the Asian market, then it's Germany. So
David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, exactly, stupid. No, that's exactly my point. You know, I mean, he was huge in Germany first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just bam, England took it and everything. So that's what happened to us. But unfortunately, England just didn't accept. We were just like, we sucked in England. They weren't really interested. So it was funny. We led this double life. We had this one song, it was huge. I mean, it got to like top 10 in like about 15 European countries. So we'd go to all these places, get picked up by limousines and all this kind of stuff. And then we'd fly back to England, and you know, it was just like,
no one cares.
Normal life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had led like a double life. It was like so weird. We felt like superheroes. Since we got off the plane, you know, and we'd get to like Germany or Luxembourg or France or Sweden, it's like we had a cape on, you know, we'd get out and there's like a limousine waiting for us. It's like girls at the airport with like waving like our faces, you know, cut out faces on a stick and stuff like that, you know. It was insane.
And then you guys were the cute boys from England.
That's right. And, right. You know, they love, because we didn't learn any language in the 5 years we're in Germany. We didn't know how to speak German because they always wanted us to speak in English.
Yeah.
All the time, you know?
Well, coming up in the third block here of the Cultural Hall, I want to find out what brought you from Germany and England to the United States, and then what you got going on now.
All right.
Coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
So that's Rumors by Awesome.
Kaboom.
Kaboom. Kaboom. I knew it was some sort of like.
See, we probably, if we'd have known that, we'd be like, we're awesome. Kaboom. That'd have been like a kaboom.
Yeah, you can find that on YouTube. It's all there. Maybe we'll throw up a link.
Oh, for sure. Alex Boye, our guest here in the Cultural Hall, rocking out.
Man, yeah.
With the guys who can't sing and can't dance.
Yep.
Awesome.
That's how they started, and then they just got amazing. And, like, they got better than I did.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they still doing anything?
No. When I left the group, it was going on for probably another year, and then they all disbanded and got real jobs.
Do you keep in contact with your boys?
Yeah, I do. In fact, this is the weirdest thing.
Awesome reunion. It's fingers crossed.
We've had
for
one.
An awesome
we had a 12-year awesome reunion last year.
Oh, great.
And you know whose fault it was? Deseret Book, can you believe, of all people?
Really? Wow.
Weirdest thing. So anyway, there was two guys that called me up and they said, we want to do documentaries, because BYU TV, they wanted more content and
stuff like that.
And so they were looking for documentaries. So these two guys, Dave Lindsay, Jason Conforto, they're filmmakers. They said, we want to do a documentary on you. I'm like, what? On your life. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to be like 60 or like almost dying or something like that, you know?
Actually, Alex, we know something you don't
know. And, they said they did some research and they found out that I used to be in like a hip hop type band and now I'm in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We need to talk about that. So I said, well, most of my life was back in England. So they flew me back to England. We had a reunion. Our first gig after 12 years was performing at bunch of scouts.
Really?
One of the guys, his son, was in a scout group. We performed for their scout group in a park.
Yeah.
And it was the funniest thing. And us trying to do the routine again. I remember we had like 17 songs that we planned that we were going to perform. After the second song, we're like, because we're all like, just like, you know, we're not 30s, 40s, you know, then. I mean, one of the guys was 16 years old.
Yeah.
You know, when we first started, now it's like 30 something, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, we're like, let's just cut it. And we had four chairs. We just sat and sang. I did the whole concert on the chairs. And if we remember the routine, we'd get up and do it. It was the funniest thing. But it was so powerful because it goes through my whole life story of me going on my mission, being in a band, and then coming off my mission, and my uncle and my mother leaving and all this stuff. And then we had my kids, they got to meet my mom for the first time. We went home to the place where I grew up and everything, took them around the hood and everything. And then, so my wife, who she'd never met, because we got married in Salt Lake, mm-hmm. you know, Salt Lake Temple, she's not a member. That was really tough, you know.
For you or tough for her?
It was tough, both, because it was like, hey, mom, you know, I'm getting married. She's so pumped and excited. But unfortunately, you can't come to the most important part of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just really, really tough. So
tell her, but there is a way that you could come if you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I've been trying doing that. In fact, sister missionaries would go. I'd send missionaries to my mom's house all the time. And she'd feed them and everything, you know, but she was just like, that's about it, you know. But one day. But so that was an amazing experience because we knocked on her door and I hadn't seen her for 7 years at that point. and she'd never seen my kid. I had one kid at the time and my wife. So we're standing there, we knock on the door. The camera's just right there and they film it. If you guys can imagine that experience, that her face, it's all on this documentary. And the documentary is called Frontman.
Has it aired yet?
It's out. Yeah, it's out in Deseret Book. You can get it. I would say honestly, and this is not bragging. This is all literally, like, I mean, I had no idea that I even had this story until these guys filmed this whole thing. Well, one thing I saw through it is I saw all the times when I followed the Lord, followed the gospel, that I saw the blessings, and all the times that I didn't, I saw the curses. I literally could see it, and it was like a great young men, young women's like activity to watch this and see, like, literally how the Lord literally, he blesses you when you do what he says, and when you don't, you're left on your own.
And it's called Frontman?
It's called Frontman.
I just found it.
Book.
Cool. Yep.
And then right at the end, you've got the prophet, President Monson is in this.
Awesome. Wow.
They interview all the Tabernacle Choir managers and members and Mac Wilberg and everything. Mm-hmm. They interview, like, a couple of my exes. They cut some of that out because it's really bad. But anyway, and then they interviewed, like, my school teachers,
yeah,
guys from my boarding school that I went to. They interviewed, like, my bishop, the stake president that set me apart to go on my mission. I mean, it's insane. I cried, like, all the way through. And we did a premiere of it, and it was sold out. It was at the... Larry H. Miller complex thing. What's that?
Megaplex.
Yeah, Megaplex. And it was like tears. Like, seriously. I mean, it was the most amazing thing.
What about those sister missionaries?
Well. Yep. Sister Thompson, they interview her.
Great.
They interview, and one of the sisters, I found out that she had cancer. I saw her, you know, 20-odd years later, and she had cancer. She lives in Provo. The whole family. It's beautiful. Awesome, awesome story, you know. And and she showed me when I was 16 the testimony that I wrote in her tea book, in her testimony book, of when I first got baptized. And I read it and I'm like, wow, I was flipping smart then. What happened now? You know, I don't write like that now, you know. So, yeah, it was amazing.
So how did you get to the United States? You left awesome.
Yeah, I left the group, and I was just wondering what, you know, it was really tough being in a group spiritually, you know.
Because of the environment that you put in?
Yeah, totally, you know, that environment. I remember one time, you know, we just finished doing a concert. We did a huge concert in Berlin, and, you know, we just opened up for the Backstreet Boys and for NSYNC and for, like, a lot of these European artists as well. And I remember I got a knock on my hotel door. Hey, there's a party going on. Yeah, sure. Let me get a shower. So they tell me the room number, and it's like next door, you know. And so I turn up. I open up the door. I walk in, and there's just like tables just lined up with cocaine, and just people just sitting there, and just all the bands, many of them that kids know now, you know, and just all just, I mean, it was crazy, and just girls and just craziness. And I remember standing there, and I just had this flashback of my mission. When my mission president said, the last day of my mission, he said, Elder, I hope you're going to do something with music. Because then I was singing like spiritual songs at baptisms and feeling the spirit, and people were feeling the spirit, and more people wanted to join just because of me singing at this baptism, and they felt the spirit. I mean, it was a powerful experience that I had on my mission. And he said, I hope you're going to do more with music when you get home. And this flashback, I remember thinking, all of a sudden, you flashback to this table with all this cocaine, and I'm like, I'm sure that the mission, that's not what my mission president meant, you know? I can't really put my finger in, but I'm sure that's not what he meant. And so there and then, I just had this wake-up call, and I was just like, I went to my manager, I said, I can't do this anymore. He said, what? I said, this environment, it's just, I can't explain it, but it's just, I can't do this anymore, you know? And he said, what? And then he pulls me aside, he says, look, he says, just think about this, you know? And then he started saying, What is wrong with you? He says, do you know you can have all the girls you want, all the women you want, you can have all the drugs you want, you can have all the cars. And he's given me this list of all these things. And I remember thinking, who's speaking to me? Who's really talking to me here? It's like his head was shrinking and getting smaller and smaller. And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. And then he just flipped and went crazy, you know? And he was like, we can find many, many more people like you. He says, we can find people better than you. He says, you're replaceable. Anyone, you know what I mean? And it was true. It was true. You know what I mean? The diamond dozen, man. People get replaced all the time. And I remember just thinking, well, that's fine. And, you know, I just cried on the way home, and that was it. It was, you know.
And then you hopped a plane to the United States.
So, well, it wasn't as simple as that. I mean, then I was just thinking of what I was going to do with my life, and I tried all things, going back to, you know, school and college and working part-time in places like a clothing store and stuffing envelopes at a mailing station and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know. And And one day I was just like, Heavenly Father, man, this is crazy. I just can't, I'm just not happy. I'm just, you know, I miss the group. I miss being with the boys. I miss all that kind of stuff, you know. And then I had another one of those experiences again. I opened up the book and just all these lessons just coming to me. I went to bed that night and I had this dream. And in the dream, I was like really scared and I was running away from something. And so as I was running away from something, there was this guy. He said to me, if you hide over there, you're going to be fine. And so I did. And so I hid. And it was under these bushes. And it was just like all of a sudden I was under these bushes. And then this water just started rising and rising and getting up. Ended up on my shoulders. And I tasted the water and it was like salty. And I remember thinking, I woke up in the morning. I was like, Salt Lake. Salt Lake. Salt Lake. That's where I'm supposed to be. So I got rid of everything. Got rid of my apartment. Sold everything. Said goodbye to all my friends and everything. My mom was bawling her eyes out. She says, what the heck are you doing? You know. And I got on a plane. Turned up in Provo. And actually, there was a little bit more to that. After I had that dream, mm-hmm. I get a phone call about a week later, and someone on the other side says, "I'm so and so. My name's Corey Connors. I'm from the Salt Lake Mormon Arts Festival, and we're having a festival coming up, and we want you to come with your band to Salt Lake to Provo to come and perform as part of this Mormon Arts Festival, where all these LDS artists from all over the world would come in to, you know, kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous. They can all relate to each other. So this was like the Mormon Singers Artists Anonymous, you know? And I was like, I didn't even know there was such thing. This would be awesome. I was like, God is good, man. So they flew me out. I said, well, I'm not in the band anymore. They said, well, let me fly. We can fly you out by yourself. Mm-hmm. Sure. So they flew me out. The event was at the Provo, the Marriott, the hotel there. And I performed, and I remember going to all these forums and meeting, you know, Thurl Bailey and Michael McLean and Kenneth Cope and Hillary Weeks and meeting all these artists. And they're all sitting up there and talking, bearing their testimonies about how, like, people's lives are being changed by their music. And I remember thinking about my music and thinking, you know, the hotel, the cocaine table. I'm like, I don't think no one's being inspired in that way with my music. And I was just like, I need to do this. I need this. This is what the Lord's talking about when he says, forsake the things of this world and seek for things of the better. I know that's what he was telling me. And so I came out here. I did the Mormon Arts Festival. Of course, I had to go back home because, you know, I'm on a 3-month visa. And I was just aching to get back. So I just, you know, I just prayed. And, you know, finally I got all my papers together and everything. And I came out here and been here ever since. Since 2000.
And you're a citizen, aren't you?
Yeah, I became a citizen 12 years later. It was hard work, man. It's February the 22nd. Okay. George Washington's birthday.
Of what year?
Of this year.
Of this year?
Yeah, we talked about it on Articles of News.
U.S. citizen. So I actually wrote a song about called Calling America.
Yeah.
About my U.S. citizenship, and it's on YouTube. It has about like 100,000 hits or something.
Can you sing
like
us a little bit of it? I don't mean to put you on the spot,
chorus. The chorus is, I mean, I actually wrote it after the 9/11 experience, and I've been singing it so many times, but I couldn't quite get the right, it just wasn't sinking in. But then after I got my citizenship, and I was heading home, and I was screaming and crying, and I was like, oh, so excited and everything, and all of a sudden all the words to the, you know, song came. And so anyway, I'm trying to think which part to sing. The song's called Calling America, and so the part of it is like, a better day is coming for mankind, for a United States and peace of mind. The envy of a nation's dream may lead to strife, but what gives men the right to take another man's life? Oh, citizens, both young and old, well, let's fight for glory, not for gold. Wave your banners to the sky. Oh, I know it's hard sometimes to be strong when you suffered for so long. So I'm calling America to help me ease the pain. I'm calling America so I can live again. Oh, I'm calling America, shine your lights for all to see. I'm calling on those stars and stripes to make a patriot of me. So
that's kind awesome. Of
I just found it. There it is. We'll do a link to that.
We don't need link to it. You just sang it for us.
I actually put a link out today on my Facebook, and I said, and I just put like an attachment. I said, go vote. And then I just linked
yeah,
it.
There you go.
That song on it, you know,
I think. You know, I haven't asked you much, but as I'm sitting here, all I can hear from you is the amount of faith that you have had and everything. You know, you left, you got kicked out of the home, you left your successful boy band. I would really like you to talk to us a little bit about that and how you found the courage and the determination to follow what you truly believed.
Well, I'm going to say there's a few things. I think one of them I don't take much credit for. The one I don't take credit for is that I felt like I was pushed into a corner where I had no choice. You know, there were some times where I could see the Lord was pushing me into a corner. And like, you know, certain things, I had no other options but to take that one. And I could see that the Lord was doing that. And but then the other thing is my African roots, you know, this is just something that we do. Like, my uncles and my family, my mother, she's like so faithful, it's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, she's not a Mormon.
Sorry, we got the market on faith.
But if she, let me tell you, man, if we, seriously, and this is just like my own thing, dude, I ain't no prophet, I ain't no bishop. But one thing I know is that, like, with my African roots, the faith that they have, I mean, they have dreams all the time. My brother, who was 6 years old, he would be in the village and he would have dreams about certain people in the village and it would be true. They were so close to God, you know, and it was because they had nothing. You know, I think of like in the scriptures, particularly like in the Book of Mormon, I realized there's some things we had to leave behind. Like Nephi, when he was told to take his family into the wilderness, leave Jerusalem, the Lord told him to leave certain things behind. One of them was their riches. Mm-hmm. And I look at it today, and I think it's almost like could be like entertainment or being distracted, or you know, by all the crazy facades that this world is throwing at you. You know, when you get rid of all that stuff, you're just so much closer to the Lord. And I think not there's anything wrong with money, but I think at that point of their life, I think the Lord was telling them, get rid of all that crap, go take the plates, and that's what you need to bring with you. And I noticed that with the way that I grew up, the way I was raised, it was with that. We had nothing anyway. We were broke. We were poor. We couldn't even spell our last names. So all we had was God. And so they were, so many of my family members, they were so close to God. It was insane. I mean, they would prophesy stuff about me that like would always come true. And some of them were pretty evil as well, you know, because there's like, you know, the whole voodoo stuff and the witch doctor stuff in there. But there were some really, really good, just good people who had just had that strong faith. And I think that the Lord has, you know, I've been blessed with that, a portion of that I've taken into my faith, I think. And I'm just like, you know, if we as Mormons, seriously, we got rid of so much of the distractions and the crap that we have. I mean, look what we have. We are like, what we have is the most insane gift. And but there's so many distractions because Satan puts his tent right next door to us, of course, because he knows, you know, what we have is just insane. But I just think we would be so much more incredibly dangerous to this world and so much more of a benefit to our fellow men and to the world. If we had, you know, what the Africans have in terms of, because they have nothing and so they just, everything's on the Lord. And having the luxuries that we have today, you know, in this country. If we had both, be insane. I think of every single day that I think of just so much crap. And then I think of how much crap I think about throughout the day compared to how much I think about the Lord. Let's put that in minutes, you know. And that's why I think the Lord sends us on missions, man. People from built up, luxurious countries. He sends us on missions and we go to the digs. The worst places ever. Yeah. So that we can learn that there must be a God because we cannot handle it without him.
Yeah.
And he gives us, so we do have it. We come back with it, but then we come back and we kind of lose it again because we're like, I got to pay my bills. I got to go to this. I got to get this. I got to get that. And then that. And all of a sudden it's just like the Lord is on a to-do list again.
Yeah.
He's not the priority. He's on the to-do list. You know, when we put, because nothing on our to-do list, nothing ever gets done on our to-do list, ever.
Right.
So when we put God on our to-do list, then that's exactly it, man. Our life never gets done. But when we put him as like the central focus, oh man, it's insane. That's why 1,000 Africans are joining the church every single month.
Is it really that much?
It's ridiculous. Because they're ready, they're prime. You know, and I'm just talking about from my experience because there's people from many other third world countries. It's insane how they join the church, you know, but this from my experience, all I can talk about. I mean, it's because there's something about that. They're already connected. So you don't need to do much. You know what I mean? These missionaries come, they turn up and they say, Christ, God, yeah. Well, what else can you tell me more? Yeah. I've been ready for years. Where have you been?
What took you so long?
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
How did it happen that you got into the Tabernacle Choir?
I still ask myself that same question, dude.
I've heard the audition process is quite extensive.
Brutal. It's brutal. It was 2006. I was, again, at kind of a crossroads, just wondering what I was going to do with music. Because, you know, I was so naive when I came here and thinking to myself, yeah, I can make like a huge career out of Mormon music.
Yeah.
I can make a living out of it, you know? And I refused to not believe it. I refused. But there were so many times when I just kept having these, you know, everybody wants everything for free. Ain't no Mormon want
to
do anything.
Welcome
to
Utah.
Every Mormon want to tell you they ain't got no budget. But then, you know, they'll pay like $50,000 on that new set of teeth. You know, and so, you know, it's just like, I've been upstairs. So, right? So it's like, you know, I started realizing, man, what am I, Heavenly Father, what am I going to do, man? These people are cheap. I can't, you know, our people, man, they don't pay me nothing, man. I bust my gut, I bust my afro, try to get something going. Now I got kids now coming, you know, I got married. I do not want a desk job. You know, so help a brother out, please. You know, and then so just certain things started happening. And it's always like, have you heard that story when the Lord, it's that story about, I think it was like Hurricane Katrina. And there was a guy on top of a roof and he was a pastor. And he was like, God, help me get out of this mess. And then so a boat comes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I mean, and then there's yes. like, and then he just, no, God's going to help me. So the boat just carries on. Then a helicopter comes. No, God's going to help me. That was me. I was like, every single thing the Lord put in front of me, but I have to look back in hindsight. You don't realize
right.
that, right?
Right.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, he sent this dude and this dude and this dude. And I almost missed that Tabernacle Choir experience because, so anyway, I had a friend of mine that called me out, Jenny Frogley. You guys yes. know who her. Awesome girl. She asked me if I'd be interested in doing a duet with her with the Tabernacle Choir. And I remember thinking, quit lying, woman. What? You know what I mean? Like, nobody sings with the Tabernacle Choir. Listen for me. You know what I mean? And she's like, no, this is straight up. This is serious. I'm like, well, prove it. She says, no, let me tell you what's going on. I got a call from Craig Jessup. And he says, he said, originally, Donny Osmond and Gladys Knight were supposed to sing this song. Mormon Tabernacle Choir doing a Broadway album, all Broadway.
Yeah.
And they were doing a song called Circle of Life. And so they were looking for some like African kind of chants and all that kind of stuff. So I guess, you know, I was the black dude, the token black dude in Utah that supposedly could do African stuff.
I know what black guy.
Oh, pick me. So anyway, I said, well, yeah, I'd love to do it. But when we can start? She says, well, it's not 100% definite that's going to happen. It's probably 90% chance that we are going to do it. And they said, because Donny Osmond and Gladys Knight, they're so tied up contractually with other obligations and stuff, they're trying to fit into their schedule. I'm like, good. I went to the temple, man. I fasted. I was like, Lord, please help them to be so busy. They ain't got no time to do nothing. They're just real crazy busy. They're on tour right now. Tour managers say, we can't even talk to you. Help a brother out, you know. And so after 2 months, 3 months, didn't hear anything. So I figured, oh, that you know, they're obviously going to do it. And I think a few more months later, I get this phone call from Craig Jessup of the choir. And I'm just like, what? You know, he says, hey, Alex, are you still up for doing this song? I was like, yeah. So I turned up at the LDS Motion Picture Studios in Provo in my suit. In the recording studio. I've never turned up to a recording studio in my suit before. That's why, this is the kind of respect I wanted to give this. This is the moment I'm in the choir, man. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I turn up in my suit. I got my tie tack, everything. I polished my shoes. Then I think I brushed my teeth. Everything, man. It was crazy. So I turned up there and you know, the staff members of the choir, you know, are there and they all got the suit and everything. So I'm like, good, I'm glad I bought my suit, you know. And Jenny Frogley's there and everything. And so I get to do my part, so I start singing. And Craig Jessup's on the other side, and he says, you know, so I do my part, you know, the opening of Lion King. So I do that, and he says, well, I like it, but can you give me a little bit more? I was like, oh, okay. So I did it again. He's like, yeah, I just feel that I'm not getting 100% from you. And then so I did it again. And then finally, you know, he comes into the studio, into the vocal booth. He says, Alex, I heard that you were this passionate singer and this and that and that. I'm not seeing this. You know what? I want more from you. So I'm like, you want more? Because I'm in my suit. This is a Tabernacle Choir. You know what I mean? Everyone's telling me you need to calm down. So I'm like, you want 100%? Art? I took off my ties, took off my jacket. And I was like, what? I said, yes, that's what I want. That's what I'm talking about. And I went, well, you should have told me, man. And I thought your Mormons are kind of real, like, conservative and you don't want no one going crazy. No, that's not what I want. I want crazy. And so after that, you know, we'd finish the session. And then he says, so what's your story? You know? Because he knew Jenny, but you know, he, you know, and so he said, you know, tell me about yourself. And so I told him about myself. And before I'd finish, he's like, have you ever considered auditioning for the choir? And I kind of stopped and I'm like looking around like...
Me?
You talking to Jenny? Yeah. No, I'm talking to you. Have you ever considered auditioning for the choir? Look, I said it's been a dream of mine, but I've never considered even following that through. He says, well, would you consider it? And I was like,
You're like, no.
I just said no. Yeah. I just basically,
no,
I just
director
said,
of the Mormon
yeah, yeah. I was like, no, because I thought of all the things that, you know, that I had to learn and what an idiot I would look and how I'm just like so... Just below any of that type of style. You know, I was in a boy band, for goodness sake. What kind of experience could I, you know what I mean? Because I know all these guys, they can read their music backwards and forwards, and they've got doctorates and all kinds of letters by the end of their name, you know what I mean? The only thing I have by my mind's homie. Alex Boy, homie. Does that get me in? You know, I don't know. And so I just said, no. He said, well, would you think about it? And I said, well, yeah, sure. And in my mind, I was like, yeah, you know, kind of thing, you know. And then I remember I was sitting at church. It was a few weeks later. I was sitting at church, and part of it was connected with back in England after I left the band, of what I made a promise that I would do. And then it was like I had this kind of spiritual slap in the face again, you know, where it was like, do you remember when you said to me that you wanted to use music and to use the highest good of music to do the most good in this world? I said, well, yeah. Well, that was it, you idiot! Well, I mean, didn't say that, but in the most loving way. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh. So I just like, you know, just swallowed my fears and everything else and the pride and all of it. I called up, you know, and I said, hey, you remember you was talking about the, you know, the auditions? Is it still on? I said, well, yeah, sure. And he told me when. So I turned up and I said, and I remember before I went in, I said, Brother Jessup, I can't read music. I've never sung in a choir before. I can't even spell most of these classical names that people, these songs that you, he says, well, you know, let me be the judge of that. And he put me through this 16-week choir school. Brutal, hardest thing I've ever done. But I think that just like on your mission, when you go to a foreign country and you're like, you know, you open up, you're hereby sent to go to Thailand, and you're thinking the only thing Thai you've ever, is you've eaten. That's yeah. it. You yeah. know what I mean? That's the only connection you had with Thai. How are you going to learn this language? And you know, you get to that MTC and just gift the tongues sets in, and all of a sudden you're like, what? You're learning sentences. That's the only way that I can explain it. Every time, honestly, I go in the choir and I'm sitting and the music is placed before me. It is like I feel literally like the gift of tongues in a musical sense, and reading the notes and being able to sing the notes in the way it's supposed to be when we only get to hear it once and stuff like that. I mean, it's a miracle. It's a miracle because I really should not, from my background, I really should not be able to do this. Mm. I should not be, just like Nephi was asked to build a ship. Nephi should not be able to build a ship because he's never built a ship before in his life. So that's when you know, it's like, I think of that scripture, you know, when they see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Because like my friends are like, Alex, you're an idiot. I know it's not you. I know there is a God because I know you. You cannot do this kind of stuff. I'm like, you're right. You are absolutely right. So every time I'm in the choir, I feel the hand of God every single time. That's why I love being there. Every single time.
You're married now.
Yeah.
Couple kids?
Married. I've got two kids, 2 and 3, and one on the way.
Oh, and one on the way?
Yeah. December baby coming up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you do the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. What else do you do? Like, how do you sustain yourself?
Well, that's it. It's music. Because, you know, of course, the choir you don't get paid for. It's it's voluntary.
That's what I'm wondering. Because I'm going, okay, it does the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, but unless I'm paying him my 10%, I don't know how this
You know, Richie, it's amazing. When I got set apart, that was one of my biggest worries. I'm like, I'm already struggling to try and get this music thing done anyway. And now I have less time to do it because I'm, you know, in this choir. And I didn't say anything. I just thought, you know, I'm just going to go with faith. But that faith would not, you know, it wasn't that strong at the time, you know. And then when I got set apart, because everybody in the choir, they get set apart. It's a calling. It's an official calling. Even though it's something you audition for, it's a calling. And in the blessing, it literally said, you will be able to succeed in both. You will be able to find time to do both. So when people ask me, I just point to the sky. Because it's not my job to explain that. It's just like a farmer when he puts a seed in the ground. It ain't his job to make that thing grow. That's God's job. You just do all the things you need to do to plant it, and then you leave. And that's kind of the way it is. It's like, you know, when I get all these gigs that starts coming up and stuff like that, and it's just, I'm just blown away with gratitude, you know, so.
Do you have another calling besides being in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir?
As a Tabernacle Choir member, you are encouraged. It's encouraged. You know, some people do have. It's encouraged that they don't get from the wards and the bishops that they don't give you another calling. But you know, I mean, you know,
ward greeter.
Yeah, you know. So
token
only because
black guy,
yeah,
did they call you that?
Well, that's not a calling, man. That's a necessity. But anyway, but yeah. So you know, it just depends. But yeah, generally,
they
choir
don't
members don't know.
If you could pick
calling.
A calling for yourself, what calling would you pick? If you could create one, or if you could pick one that already exists, what would you pick?
I would be. It's kind of along the lines of the TBG. You know, I'd be like, you know, this is how you talk to black Mormons when you come in. No, just kidding. No. Yeah. I'd have my own like priesthood lesson on black Mormons and how to treat them. No.
Have you ever been to the Genesis group?
I do. Yes.
Yeah,
I'm a member of it. And we have a lot of fun. We, you know, there's always all these myths.
I was going to say, for people who don't know, the Genesis group is a group of black Latter-day Saints. It's, and it doesn't have to be just black. Like,
no,
I
no.
can go.
Yeah, anyone can go.
But
it's just,
like
again,
group.
I call it Alcoholics Anonymous for black Mormons. You know, it's a place where we can all go and relate to each other. And it's amazing. Actually, it was officially formed by a gentleman in 1971, Bridget Rushforth. Oh gosh, I've totally slaughtered the name now. So Darius Gray is probably going to be listening. He's like, oh, that guy. So anyway, Rushforth was the last name. But there was three, including Darius Gray and another black member. They approached the First Presidency and they said, you know, our black members are just falling through the cracks, and you know, they come to the church and they feel that it's like an all white church, and then they just fall away, and it just keeps happening. And so they formed that, you know, so that, you know, people can, you know, just have some kind of togetherness. And obviously they go, it doesn't take them away from their ward, whatever ward they are. And I didn't think it was important until I came here. And like in England, it was not a problem, you know, but when I came out to the US, it seemed to be a really, really big problem. And, you know, learning more about history and stuff, I, you know, I understand why. And so, you know, I want to try my best to be a part of that and to help in some way, you know. But I got to tell you, it's insane. I mean, even with these elections and stuff like that, even just the other day, I just put someone said to me, you're black and you're Mormon, so who are you going to vote for? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, and then I get like all this, I get like hate emails, like about me being black and being Mormon. Almost every week, almost weekly. Mm. And it's insane. I mean, you know, my wife's been in tears, you know, a couple of times.
Your wife is not black, right?
No, she's, you know, as white as they come. My wife.
Where's she from?
She's Olympus, went to Olympus High.
Yeah.
You know, and she's just, yeah. And she's just so awesome. She's a beautiful soul, and she really understands me, you know. She really understands me. And well, apparently I just found out the other day that she like used to have, when she was like younger, she had a black doll. And she was always everyone always thought that was gonna happen anyway. She's gonna marry a black guy. But anyway, so so that those things have been tough. So one of my goals is to support the church and the stuff that's being said about the church and about, you know, about the racism and all this kind of stuff. Let me tell you, you know, the amount of times that people say, well, you know, you go to this white church and you're a black man and they didn't allow you to have the priesthood and all this and that stuff. How can you be a member of that church? And I'm like, okay, let's just go back, okay, into history. All right. First of all, if you can tell me any church in America that didn't have a racial issue, let me know and I'll be a member of it. I'll be the first one to sign up. Let me know. Mm-hmm. You give me any denomination, let me know. So don't make this a Mormon issue. Make it a world issue. You know, the civil rights was not a Mormon issue. So don't make it a Mormon issue. Leave it alone. You know, at the end of the day, and here's the interesting things. You know, they say, well, yes, but your church, you know, there was racism and some of the leaders said some racist things and this and that and that and this. And I'm like, okay, let's go back again. Okay. When supposedly you heard these leaders say these things, let's think of how old the church was at the time and where they were coming from. Okay, so you've got people who became Mormons. They were what? Catholics, Presbyterians, Baptists, you know, all these things. So remember when I was talking about how they bring their traditions with them? So don't make this a Mormon issue again. Make this an issue. Okay, it's an issue that we've got to deal with, and it still exists. Fine, just don't make it a Mormon issue. Because it's not right, it's not accurate, and it's not fair, and it's not constitutional. So leave it alone. One of the things, you know, and you know, for me, I would always just simply say, because a lot of times, you know, us as church members, they'll say, well, you know, it wasn't time. It wasn't supposed to be. Unfortunately, people don't want to hear that anymore.
Yeah. Right.
You know, people don't want to hear it wasn't time. People don't want to hear it happened. Get over it. People don't want to hear that. It's just like, you know, if you're in a relationship, you know what I mean? You have an argument with your wife and you say to her, you know what I mean? And she says, well, why you did the dishes? You say, honey, just leave it alone. It wasn't time. You know, honey, it's just,
wait,
you know.
Actually, I'm going to write this just down.
Yeah, honey, you know, it wasn't ready.
It's not going to work, Richie.
Let it go. You know, it doesn't work. They'll slap you in the face. I don't care how Mormon they are. You're sleeping in a different bedroom. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. So why are you using it in this issue? It doesn't work in any issue. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't say that anymore. And that's kind of one of my big things. But then here's the thing. Because they don't know what to say, they will make up stuff. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. You know, because there's been things like, oh, you know, blacks were less valiant in the pre-existence. Well, that doesn't make sense, because either you were you were a part of the third of hosts of heaven or you wasn't.
Yeah.
There's no in between. Yeah. What, you half spirit and half human? You know what I mean? If the third host of the heaven was cast down here, okay, because they rejected the gospel. So what about, so that means the blacks have half a body and they're stuck in between both places, or they sat on the fence? There is no fence in the pre-existence. You were either here saying I'm following this part of the gospel, or you were here saying I'm following the adversary. Simple as that. So let that one go. You know, so there's all these myths that come in, and you know, hey, I say out of love. You know, it was said because there were some people that were tired of saying, you know, we don't know, or it wasn't time. So they wanted to.
So they start making stuff.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah. Yep. And so then you go back to some of the things in the biblical times with the Bible, because, I mean, look, there were people, you know, there were denominations that were justifying slavery because of the things that were in the Bible. I'm like, really? What kind of Bible are you people reading? Mm-hmm. Help a brother out here. You know? So I guess my goal is just to play a part in just, you know, disseminating myths and just to support my church and, in what they believe and what it represents and how it's blessed my life, and also to be, you know, a part of spreading the gospel in the way that I know how, you know.
We got one more question for you, then we got to let you go.
Yeah.
What is your favorite part of your faith?
The favorite part of my faith, I think, is the action, the doing it. I mean, I can talk about it all I want. I can talk about it. I can have fancy words. I can tell you, I can get up and bear my testimony and say all these really cool things, but they'll make a blind bit of difference if I'm not living it. And, you know, a lot of times I think it's easy, and I've done this so many times, where I just talk my faith and I wonder why my life sucks and I'm not happy. I'm a Mormon, but I just talk my faith, you know. It's not until I'm living them things. Because sometimes with the scriptures, it's like we got everything that we know that Jesus Christ said. Oh, well, no, not everything, but the things in the Bible, in the scriptures, the things that Jesus Christ taught us. And we say, yeah, you know, that's what he taught us. But do we really believe him? Like, we'll say, oh, yeah, we know Jesus Christ existed. We believe him. But do we believe in the words that he said? Because at the end of the day, we can say, oh, my life sucks and it's really hard and everything. I'm a member of the church and I don't know how to accomplish that. There's no way I can do that. I'm just one person. And then we just read that week, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what it is. That's what the real gospel is. It's not reading about it. It's doing what we read. And so that's my favorite part, is trying to learn that more, trying to work more on the action part as opposed to the talking part, because I talk too much.
No, you're good.
We didn't care.
Yeah. One last thing before we go. We like to ask everyone to climb up on the Rammy Umptum and tell everyone where they can find you, follow you, tweet you, text you.
I just liked your Facebook page.
All right, Alex people. Boye. Yeah, awesome, man. Yeah, go on my Facebook page. I have a music page there. And then go Twitter.
Just under Alex Boye.
Alex Boye, yeah. Just B-O-Y-E. Type in Alex Boye. B-O-Y-E, yeah. And I'm on, my Twitter is AlexBoye1. So go check that out. And
is
my
there
website.
Another one? Is that what happened with
no.
that?
Yeah, I don't know. I just put that. I don't know why I put that. Alex Boye one. So,
okay.
And then my, although I did type in my name on Twitter, and there's like 1,500 names, Alex Boye is all right. It's weird.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, and then my website, alexboye.com, BOYE.com.
Is there an awesome Facebook page? Can I go like...
yeah, there's a VH1 Where Are They Now awesome page. Yeah.
What about Kaboom? Do they have a page?
Yeah, I think probably now. After this flipping interview, yeah.
Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that you'll be able to travel home safely when the time comes.
And you'll take these stories into your daily lives.
In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the Cultural Hall. Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.